Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Lena Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Welcome in to the DNVR Avalanche Podcast, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Use code DNVR to sign up for a new account to get amazing odds boosts every single day. Rudo, AJ, Megan, coming at you live. The Avs are officially in Finland at this point. Haven't had time to really do anything there yet. I guess they practiced this today in Finland, you know, which it's the middle of the night in Finland now, basically. So that was very, very early in the day for us. But they're officially there. We figured it was a good time to take a look at some of the positives across the season so far for the Avalanche. Get into the things that they've done right. As it's very easy to fall into the trap of only looking at the negatives and what teams need to improve, which certainly there are plenty of things to talk about there for Colorado, but there are plenty of things that they're doing right as well. So, indeed, a very well-rested Pavel Francouz who couldn't get off the get off the plane to switch planes. Very amusing. Let me start by asking you two this. Who has been the Avs' best player so far this season? Is it Valanciunas?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say it's Valanciunas.
Okay.
I would have said I think it's Nichushkin or Georgiev.
Okay. Cool. I would probably lean Nichushkin there. Same. Georgiev is very good. He's really done a very good job of keeping the Avs in games and winning games for them. In fact, he has all of the Avs wins in goal. So
had that Islanders game stayed 3-1.
Yeah.
Probably be going Georgiev right now, but
yeah. So let's start with Georgiev just because he's the goalie. Be a little bit of a different conversation. You always kind of expect goaltenders to take a little while to adjust to new hockey teams. We haven't really seen that from Georgiev. Is this a comfortability level for him? Is it just a system that works with him? Is it a hot streak? Are we expecting him to be able to maintain the quality save percentage, the quality play that we've seen from him? We know he's been on some highs, beating his old team in the Rangers, things like that. Is this sustainable?
I think it is. And I think one of the reasons why we're cautious with new goaltenders is that the Avs play a certain way. And we've seen it take some time for guys to adjust before. And I just think that's just a natural, okay, it's going to take them a little while to understand what they're asking of Colorado's goaltenders and to get down that communication and that comfortable, you know, the level of comfort with the defensemen and the communication and the systems of where the puck is expected to be going. So where, you know, how Georgiev plays and how he adjusts and how he gets himself kind of set up to perform in that system, and then taking to UC Parkle as coaching, and you know, like, there's so much for a goaltender to adjust to when he gets into a new team. We always just think of it as like stop the puck, right? Like you just come in and you just, but there's so many little details. There's so much nuance that a goaltender has to adjust to. I think the early returns from Georgiev would suggest anyway, that it's just a great fit, that when the Avs were looking around and they were trying to find, okay, well, we're not going to give Kemper a long-term deal. We're not going to bring him back. So we need to find a solution. You know, they turned to their scouting and said, okay, who is a guy that would fit, you know, who's got a guy, which guy has a skill set that we think would be able to make the transition into net for us at a high level. And their answer was obviously Georgiev, because they made one of the very first moves on the goaltender market of the entire summer. So clearly he was a preference for them, not just like a, hey, we have to do this thing, because it's the last guy available, kind of was where they were with Kemper. They wanted Georgiev, and I think that the returns certainly suggest that they might have been right about that.
I think another reason that I think it's sustainable is one of Georgiev's strengths is how teachable that he is. All of the notes that he's been getting from Parkala since he's arrived here have been ones that he has immediately taken to address. And he also self-evaluates and gives himself notes after every game of little things that he wants to improve upon. And that's why I think we've seen him adjust as quickly as he has to these systems. And I think it only gets better from here as the team playing in front of him also gets more comfortable, because I think that's the other strength of the Avalanche as a whole, is they are expected to be a team with a strong defensive mindset that dominates possession in the offensive zone and takes a little bit of pressure off of Georgiev. And we haven't quite seen that in its full effect yet. And I think once the Avs start gelling in that area, it just gets more comfortable for Georgiev.
Yeah, and we've seen he has a top 10 save percentage in the league right now at .918. Is that an insane save percentage? No, but I think it also talks to the high levels of offense we've seen throughout the league so far in the year early on, as defenses still haven't really settled in. He's also faced 11th in shots against per game at 34.4, at least for goalies that have played at least half of their team's games. So he is facing a pretty significant workload right now that you would expect to go down, and he's still playing quite well. 66.7 quality start percentage. It's been solid for Georgiev. And I guess my question is, do you expect an experience of Georgiev like Kemper, where he plays significantly better in games where he's facing fewer shots? Or do we expect the Varley experience where, you know, sometimes a goalie actually plays a little bit better with a heavier workload?
Well, I think heavier workload is rhythm. And so, I mean, we think you call it the Varley experience, but I think that's really just the NHL goalie experience, because goalies are more accustomed to facing more shots. And when they get into a game where they're getting bombarded like that, they're into a rhythm, you know, they're into a certain, okay, well, I made one save and now here comes again. I think it's a lot harder to be the guy on the other end. You know, there was that COVID season, Philip Grubauer had sparkling numbers, but his underlying numbers weren't very good because the Avs suppression was so good that it almost made it a harder job in terms of producing good numbers like that. Like Philip Grubauer needed shutouts every game in order to produce positive expected goals numbers, you know? So it's almost a harder job in that way. And that, and then the, you know, the mental side of it, we always talk about a goalie gets bored, you know, he spends all game doing nothing. And then all of a sudden there's three shots on goal in front of him and he's got to be ready for that. You know, he's got to be mentally locked in for that. So that's, you know, I think that was, that's a thing that Georgiev has not gotten to really, I mean, he's experienced it once, right?
Yep.
He had like the one game where there was like 18 shots on goal or whatever. Otherwise, the Colorado's defense hasn't been very good, so he's been getting. It's like he's back with the Rangers, so he hasn't gotten to feel that yet.
I think too the simplest way for me to look at it is in that New York Rangers game, the head to head against a goalie like Shesterkin. It's really him facing a heavier workload if it's 5v5. If he is seeing that heavier workload because he is having to also defend on the penalty kill, the team is down a man, those are higher danger chances, and that's where I see he struggles just a little bit more. But I think if he's being tested in ways throughout the game to keep up rhythm, like AJ was saying, 5v5, I think that benefits a goaltender, generally speaking. But if we are looking outside of 5v5 hockey, I don't see the need to continue testing a goaltender, keeping him busy in that way, because it just challenges him with higher danger chances that are going to be more difficult, and it can be avoided if the team can stay out of the penalty box or PK a little bit better.
So maybe try to find a happy medium here where the Avs defense doesn't need to get it sub 20, but sub 30 at least.
Yes.
I would say if they don't get to sub 30, man, they're
in big trouble. Yeah.
Because the way that they've built their team, the way that they've invested their money, you know, they roll out Josh Manson and Eric Johnson. Their third pairing's basically as expensive as their top pairing is.
Yeah.
It's actually a little more expensive. So, they've invested on having a great defense. And so if they're giving up 30 shots a game, that defense isn't doing its job. And you have a way bigger problem.
I do want to talk about the defense too. I'll talk about Val as well. But first, I want to get into the portion of the game that the Avs have been best at so far this season, and that's the power play. It has come down to about 40% now, but still unreal good so far.
It's the 0-for-6 in Jersey. That's,
yeah.
If you remove that, they're still
50%, like, basically
dominating.
Yeah. So it's been unbelievably hot. And yeah, I'm sure you can chalk some of that up to the offense that has started this season that we've talked about. But are there specific things you two are looking at that are working right now on the Avs PP?
The personnel, the chemistry in passing on the power play, at least, has worked to their advantage, like between guys like Mikko Rantanen and MacKinnon. I think there's some trust that's being built too that is allowing them to find one another more easily, especially within the top power play unit. I think that's worked well for them, Val included in that conversation.
Yeah. For me, I really think we've seen a lot more flexibility out of the Avs power play this year. Obviously, Kale's not scoring goals very well, but you've seen MacKinnon hit the one-timer from his side. You've seen Erod score a few times from the bumper area with some very good shots. You've seen Val and Mikko kind of find this new rotation where Mikko sits behind the net and can play out of there, or they can rotate where Val moves net front and Mikko plays off the wall. Right now it does feel like they're able to give teams a significant number of looks that it's hard for them to cover all of.
This is the number one thing that stands out for me, is that they are not doing it. It's not Makar at the top, you know, getting tips. It's not MacKinnon on the half wall. And they've gotten nothing out of Mikko Rantanen on the power play as a goal scorer. He's been purely a playmaker. The fact that their power play is what it is, and Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar aren't scoring goals,
yep,
is a testament to what they've been able, you know, just what they've been able to find, you know, with Val Nichushkin, with Evan Rodriguez, because you go and you look, and the goals, they're just different. You know, it's a different goal every time that they score. It's not one. It's not one avenue of success. Like, you go and you look at Steven Stamkos is off to an insane start scoring power play goals in Tampa Bay this year. And most of them are just him firing away one-timers. Like he's 25 all over again. It's just cut and pace. He's just beating goalies. With the Avs, what they've been able to do is they've been able to find so many different ways to score. And it's not, they have not gotten into that, that kind of, that I think it's a bad habit when teams kind of lean into, okay, well, here are the two ways that we score goals, so this is all we're going to do. And they spend the entire time just trying to force pucks there. The Habs haven't really done that. It's happened out. It's been out high. It's been the middle of the ice. It's been the half wall. It's been plays from down low with Mikko behind the net. Like, Mikko Rantanen would be a 50-goal scorer and maybe any other team in the NHL, any other situation, where he's so talented that they run everything through him. But in Colorado, because he's the second, third, fourth option at times, he leans so much into the play. Leans so much into the playmaking. He's literally standing behind the net. He's not even a goal scoring threat. Well, and their power play is dominating.
And it's funny because he's definitely not the first option for Shooter, but a lot of these goals are getting run through him, right? He's the guy passing to Erod in the bumper spot. He's the guy passing to Val cutting to the middle from behind the goal line. And it is almost using Nathan MacKinnon often as a decoy on the opposite side of the ice because every team marks him up pretty well on the penalty kill. So it's a very good job that the Avs have managed to maintain a threat across, away from MacKinnon on that power play.
It is really impressive, honestly, so far, that their success is, one, at such a level, which won't, obviously, like, it won't continue. You'll have those over six games where it just doesn't go well. But you, for me, I think I'm just impressed with how good it has been, how efficient it's been. It's been a joy to watch that unit, and special teams are almost always the thing that make you feel like
drive you crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Just such a frustrating aspect of the sport. So consistently, got to enjoy this because they're going to have a stretch where it does not go well. And it's going to be like, remember the good old days.
Like the conversation about the power play there. If you want to start hot like the power play does, Athletic Greens can help you out in the mornings. You can jump on it, just one scoop into your cup of water, even on any day, every day. I highly recommend you take it. You know, I'm a bit of a late riser, so you can kind of replace breakfast with it. If you're in a rush, super easy to throw it into your cup. It's also got 75 different vitamins and minerals, a bunch of whole food source superfoods, probiotics, all the good stuff that your body needs. So you can check it out today at athleticgreens.com/avalanche. A bunch of people use it to help boost their immune system. Athletes use it as part of their daily routines with workouts and things like that. So time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially with it being flu and cold season. I've been a little bit under the weather, so, you know, you got to take care of your stuff. be sure to get your Athletic Greens today at athleticgreens.com/avalanche. And when you order today, you'll get a 1-year supply of vitamin D as well as 5 travel packs with your first purchase. So go and check it out. We're also brought to you by the amazing DraftKings Sportsbook. You can use code DNBR when you sign up with a new account over at DraftKings right now. And you can go bet yourself $5 on any NBA team to win their next game and get $200 in free bets if they do. With the $200 in free bets, feel free to bet on whatever you want. If you're like us, if you're feeling positive right now, looking at the positives of the Avs, go bet on the good stuff. If you're feeling negative, hey, no one's going to stop you from betting against the Avs if that's how you feel. Do either at DraftKings Sportsbook. You can also do same-game parlays if you really want to boost your odds. Very simple ones like betting the over and the Avs to win, or incredibly complicated ones like taking specific goal scores all over the map and getting really, really crazy with the odds. So head on over to DraftKings Sportsbook today. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only. Other terms, restrictions, or conditions apply. Don't forget to use that DNVR code. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I know the PK has not been very good, but very quickly, the Avs have the second most shorthanded goals in the league with 3. usual suspects here, right? Logan O'Connor, Andrew Cogliano, those types of guys. Are we at least taking that positive out of the PK, or are we at least hoping there's some sustainability to the Avs being a little bit of a threat with their aggressive play?
I'm struggling with that one because the aggression has been some of what has created errors on the PK. If Logan O'Connor could find that finishing touch outside of the PK, it would be a different conversation. But if the only place he can find it is shorthanded on the PK, a struggling PK at that, I don't know if that's how I want to accept it. I think I'd rather see that play out a little differently.
Okay.
Probe. This was the carbon copy of last year. PK was brutal. The Avs led the league in shorthanded goals. We tried to feel good about that. The PK got better. They stopped scoring shorthanded goals. I will take a better PK.
Okay. 100%.
Yeah. Just get better. And I do think that it is starting to make some inroads at I think it's shown quite a bit of improvement already.
All right. Well, something to build off at very least on the PK side.
I think it's trending in the right direction, but it was also like, it was at like 40% at its worst, where you're just like, dude, you're talking about the best power play ever is any power play that touches the ice against the Avs at that point. It was that bad.
Yeah.
So, I think it's trending in the right direction, but also it's not saying a lot.
Okay. Let's get into some actual skaters then. Who is the best defenseman on the Avs so far this year? Is it Bowen Byram?
No.
Is it Cale Makar?
I think so.
Okay. So we can set the table for both of these guys. Makar has been far from perfect this year. We've seen him make plenty of mistakes. He still has no goals. Despite that, he still has 7 assists in 9 games, is still producing at a more than fine clip for a defenseman that isn't the best defenseman in the world. And I think it's pretty clear that there's still significantly more to come from him. I'll give the floor to you guys on.
He picked up an 8th assist.
Oh, did he get an? Okay, so even better than I thought. I'll give the floor to you guys on what you guys expect for him to turn the corner, how he manages to do that, but where are you sitting on him?
I'm struggling with him at the start of the year with his, just the way that he's handling the puck in general. At the end of last year, you know, it was so good. He was so tight with the puck. He was a magician out there just doing crazy things. And he just looks so human right now. And it's unfair that a guy with 8 points in 9 games, we're sitting here like,
he sucks.
Yeah, so like,
better than this.
When's he going to start playing better? You know, that's also like the standard that he's set. We know that he's capable of playing better. We're not dreaming on him. You know, we're not Red Wings fans pretending that Mo Sider is the truth right now. Like, we know that Cale Makar is the man. We know he's the best defenseman in the NHL because he has been over the course of a couple of years, because the start to his career is something that's historic. You know, he set the standard that we're now holding against him. So it's not, you know, this is his fault is what I'm saying. He was too good too soon. But it's really like his play with the puck, I think, has left a lot to be desired. And honestly, defensively, he looks kind of like a mess more often than not. He just has not been nearly as good. His physicality has been almost non-existent. That aggression, that sneaky like willingness to just embarrass somebody. He's really just been okay in so many aspects relative to what we expect from him.
Sure.
I still think he's among the best right now on the team to include Devontaeves, especially defensively. I have not had much issue with Devontaeves defensively. And we're just used to seeing a lot more offensive production from both of those players. Like with Makar, you know, six of those points are on the power play. And so you'd like to see him find that touch of production outside of it because we know that to be true of him. And there's so much about this start for the Colorado Avalanche that is really similar to their start last year. And we know that Makar was quietly battling a not serious hand wrist injury. And I can't help but wonder if he just has something that is bothering him at the moment that he's going to battle through the same way that he did at the start of last season. And we'll get to see true form kill Makar in a couple weeks' time. That's my hope. Like, I haven't even lost hope. I have no reason to have lost hope in Kale Makar. For whatever reason, his slower start isn't too unfamiliar to me from what I saw last season to give up hope on him.
Well, certainly he's about to, in the middle of getting, what, 9 of the next 13 days off or something insane. So plenty of time off if guys aren't quite 100% to maybe get off of their injuries a little bit here. I am curious. The Avs have three defensemen that are averaging over 20 minutes a night, obviously Makar and Taves, but also Bo and Byram. Are we looking at Byram taking that next step into the top pairing this year, or is this a guy who's benefiting from a little bit of sheltering?
Just based on what he's done so far, he hasn't taken that step yet.
Okay.
If you start to dig into some of the other numbers, Devontaeves and Kale Makar, far and away, the best players, the best pairing, and producing the best results for them. Byram has had a fine start, but there's a lot of room for it to get better. Production-wise, it's been good. It's been encouraging. But when you get into some of the deeper stats, some of the underlying stuff, it hasn't happened yet. It's not to say that it won't. The team itself is off to a slow start, but Colorado's got two defensemen right now that are, you know, their fancy stats look good, and they've got four defensemen that aren't good. And we know that they all have more to give than what they have so far.
For sure.
I would say it's just been a slow start for that group in general. And really, it's like Byram is very much part of that.
All right.
I think some of the shortcomings of his game right now have been that the lows have appeared very low. Some of the mistakes he's made have been very raw mistakes. And what I'd like to see from him is taking a step forward that alleviates some of that distribution from the top pairing. But I still envision Byram being something in the second pairing that is competitive with the amount of time on ice with the first to help alleviate how much Kale Makar and Devontaeves are being tested every night.
For sure. So I don't want to call him an auxiliary piece because I think he's more important than that, but certainly in a position to, he doesn't have to be the guy on the defense this year, for sure.
Maybe ever, honestly.
Things kind of depend a couple of years down the line, how the Avs defense shakes out, for sure. But he's certainly going to be sitting behind Kale Makar, or shotgun to Kale Makar, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
All right. We beat around the bush enough. Let's get into some of these forwards. Val Nichushkin, Nathan MacKinnon, both leading the team with 12 points each. Val, obviously, at a higher point per game rate, missing a couple of those games. I don't believe Val's production is anywhere near sustainable. Things like shooting 27% are not going to keep up. But how much of what the Avs lost, Kadri's production, Burakovsky's production, can Val reasonably continue to replace this season? Half? More?
I'm afraid to commit to anything, having any kind of opinion on what Val can or can't do anymore.
Undersell at a consistent rate on this guy. Mean,
every time I'm like, I feel like, I feel like this is probably as good as it gets. He turns it up another notch and turns it up another notch. And so I kind of don't want to be in this business anymore of talking about what Val can or can't do.
I mean, if he's got another notch. It just
makes me feel stupid all the time.
He's going to start breaking records if he's got another notch. So, I hope that happens, but I don't think it's very realistic. Not to take away. The point of this show is to talk about the positives, and Val has been, as AJ
only
would put
positive.
It, absolutely nails so far this season.
I the confidence and just the way that he's played the game. Like, you get a couple of guys every year that kind of fluke their way to really hot starts.
Yeah.
And some of this, tipped pucks and stuff that are going in, like, that those are really, like, highly unreliable in terms of consistent scoring. But the way that the guy has played the game, he's been special. He's been that kind of dominant. If there was a Hart Trophy for the first month of the season, he'd have been in consideration for it.
Did just get announced as Avs Player of the Month, so that's basically a Hart Trophy for the month.
I think it's two sides for me. He is a product of his work ethic, and so that's why I think some of this is sustainable for Val. But the other side of it is there's only one puck on the ice, and there are players who have a lot more to find in their game that is going to maybe take away a bit from that. But I think that it's going to be somewhere in between for Val being able to sustain it because of his work ethic. But I'm also hoping for some of these other forwards to take huge steps forward. And that's just going to take a little bit away from it. Not the points total, though. I can still see Val being a contributor in how those plays get made.
I think my biggest positive for Val isn't even the production. On a team where we've seen the team defense be truly horrible some nights, particularly the forwards, when in situations like back checks, sometimes they just look completely lost. We've seen Val hold it down on the defensive side as a forward and really push the Avs in the right direction. Take the overtime the other night where they managed to actually get it to a shootout and win the game against the Rangers. Why did the overtime work? Because they took Mikko off of that first overtime unit and put Val on it. They didn't make any stupid decisions there because Val was there to back him up. And obviously, everyone's going to talk about the points. Everyone's going to talk about the offense. But sitting behind that is Val holding things together a lot of the time in this top six defensively, especially missing players like Landeskog who help do that for them.
Yeah, his defensive game hasn't dropped much. If you go and you look at some of the numbers and stuff, it has like a little bit, but it's still very, very good. So it's not anything that you're upset about, or bothered by or any of that. And guy's nails. He's been great. I mean, I really don't. It's so funny to me that when there are ups and downs, there's a lot more to talk about than when a guy's just been good or bad. And when a guy's just been good, especially because you're like, well, when a guy's been bad, there's lots of things to talk about. Hey, he can improve here and there. What the hell more could you ask for Val Nichushkin right now? Honestly, the guy has been so good. I just don't know how you could ask for anything more from him that he hasn't already been giving. I mean, he's been that good. The Avs, it's so weird, this position that they're in, because the Avs feel like they're in trouble. It feels like their forward core isn't good enough, that it's too thin. It's struggling. It doesn't have good enough. The players that were getting bigger roles weren't ready for them. Like it feels bad right now, but Val Nichushkin will be back for the Columbus games later this week. Gabe Landeskog will be back at some point. And those are not two guys. Those are two guys who are universally accepted as top 70 players in the NHL. Those are not typical second line players. Those are not guys that are like, well, you know, well, we're getting back up. I'm sorry to do this, but his name popped up on my Twitter feed, so he's my example. It's not like getting back a Danton Heinen in your lineup where it's just like, that's a good player, but that's not a guy that changes the dynamic of your lineup. Gabe Landeskog and Val Nichushkin completely alter the dynamic of Colorado's top six and maybe even top nine, because some of those guys that are maybe getting overplayed a little bit and can't handle a role up there, you know, with JT Compher, Alex Newhook, like those guys are going to be getting pushed down into a third line role. Now you still have to answer the 2C question. Maybe that ends up being Mikko, right? Like that opportunity, that opening is still there. Maybe that's just where they go for a little while, but it really has been like, it's a weird feeling that like, it feels so bad right now because you've seen such a stark contrast from top guy production and bottom guy production. And there's been almost no middle guy production. Like Evan Rodriguez has like slid and is like now the one middle guy. Yeah. And Arturi Lehkonen's actual numbers are middle guy production, but four of his 6 points now, because he got an assist the other day, but four of his 6 points came in the first two games. He's got 2 points in the rest of those. And so it's like, you're still talking about top guy and bottom guy. There's almost no middle guy right now, other than Evan Rodriguez. And I don't know. It's just a weird like feeling to feel as negative about the forward core as I do right now, but also knowing that there is legitimate help along the way. And yeah, when those guys get healthy, who knows who else might be injured in that time. Maybe it's all of them. Maybe it's none of them. We don't really know. But even getting a Darren Helm back, you know, right now the fourth line isn't, for in my opinion, it's not even so much that the fourth line is bad. It's that it's not trusted enough to be played. Yep. And that's creating a massive imbalance in Jared Bednar's usage.
Yep.
That I think is causing more problems than it's solving. And just a more traditional balance, you know, you cut. Evan Rodriguez should never play 27 minutes for you.
Yeah.
In a regulation game, like if that's a 2-overtime game or something, dude, we all know how those numbers get. Fine. But in a game that ended in 3 periods, Evan Rodriguez almost played half of it. That's, to me, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. Jared Bednar's usage is definitely a topic for another day, as we have a lot of time off here. We'll get into that, I'm sure. For today, obviously, we talked about Val. I want to open up other positives you guys have. You can talk about MacKinnon or some of the obvious ones, or if there's some specific that you wanted to get into. You good?
I mean, Evan Rodriguez, like, I really don't want to sell him short that we weren't totally sure what we were going to get there, because his career has been such that he's had really hot stretches. He hasn't really been a consistent everyday NHL player for very much of it, even though he's 29, but he's like been in the NHL for years now. Having the kind of impact that he has, you know, especially those first couple of games, he looked awful. But I mean, you have to feel good about how he's really started to show out in the last week. He looked a lot better. I mean, he just did. He looked a lot better.
But on a team where it feels like at times they've certainly been, at least beyond the top line, reluctant to shoot the puck, Evan Rodriguez has no qualms with letting that thing fly.
Yeah.
And he's got some goals to show for it. So funny how that works out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do feel good about a guy like LOC start to the season. I've been a little frustrated with it, but it's more that he's being forced to play up in the lineup.
Yeah.
And then you just can't, like, at this point in his career, Cogliano can't do that. reliably. You know, a good example, you know, that we saw that confer that the pass that JT Confer made to him the other day in front of the net, that has to be a goal.
Yeah.
That has to be a goal. It's a great save by Varley, but Cogliano has to finish that.
Yep.
And Cogliano 5 years ago would have finished that. But I also think with LOC, you're looking at what's happening with him on the ice is basically nothing bad.
His defensive side is elite. They're giving up nothing with him on the ice.
It's been immaculate to start the season, and he's one of their most reliable players in that every game you are comfortable that what you're getting out of him, you're going to get some speed, you're going to get some physicality, and if you're lucky, you get a little bit of offense to boot. You know, he'll create a little havoc, and he'll put some panic into some poor defenseman when he blocks a shot and he goes racing down the ice and, you know, botches another breakaway when he tries to go to his fucking backhand. But he created the breakaway in the first place, right? Like, that's a scoring opportunity that he took from one end to the other. And that's, like, I do want, like, talking about positives here, I do feel like LOC has had the kind of, for $1 million?
Yeah.
Girl, please.
Megan, any players to add?
No. I think Erod and LOC are good.
Okay, well, we are brought to you by Hassel Cattle Company. The Avs might need some meat in the middle of their lineup. You need some meat at home. So go hit up HasselCattleCompany.com to get some delicious Wagyu beef. You can get the burgers. You can get the sausages. You can get other meats as well, things like tomahawk steaks, all of the meat that you can imagine. Go check them out. They're a Texas family farm that delivers straight to your door. So everyone loves them, genuinely. Everyone we've had get Wagyu beef from them is like, this is actually the most delicious meat I've ever had. So head to HasselCattleCompany.com to get your bag of beef today and use code DNVR20 to get 20% off your entire purchase. And, of course, we're also brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery, the official beer of DNVR. The Broncos actually won a football game, so maybe check out the Broncos Country beer. It can happen.
They won a game and then traded Bradley Chubb. So, cool.
At least they won, all right? I don't have to listen to another week of Broncos fans being upset about losing.
Now they're just upset about winning.
Yeah, it's less. There's less vitriol, though, all right? I don't need another week of the entire city being mad about high knees.
Man, we need to make a separate GOTY award for dumbest sports story of the year just so we can vote for that.
High knees.
Yeah.
Okay, well, check out Breckenridge Brewery. Maybe it'll make you forget about high knees or something. I don't know. Use their local beer locator online at breckbrew.com. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast. You thought we were going to get through a whole show without talking about prospects. Wrong.
Not on my watch.
gonna give the floor over to Megan to talk about the Eagles, who have been starting good. Look, you already know I'm a fan of Jean-Luc Foudy this year. Kid's been popping off.
Actually, too, I missed the pod because it was the next day and I was doing the wedding thing, so I didn't get to hear how you guys talked about Jean-Luc Foudy. I'm just curious what you think of him, but I know what I think of him.
I mean, I don't even remember what we said, to be honest, but I really love his game this year. If more than anything, I'm glad to see a prospect breaking out. Glad it could have been anyone, but happy that it's Foudy. The reality of the Avs lineup is he's just not really going to have a spot this year, but a quality year from any prospect should set them up to at least compete for a roster spot next year. And is Foudy a perfect player? No, he's going to need to work on getting to the dangerous areas a little bit more, getting off that perimeter. But one, his goal scoring is happening, which we haven't seen enough from him. It really started last playoffs, but last year he just wasn't a big goal scorer in the regular season. And two, he looks incredibly comfortable with the puck. So a lot of confidence there from me.
That comfortability with the puck, too, is there's habits they're trying to break out of Foudy, and one is because he is such an elite skater, he is a strong puck carrier. You definitely notice him when he has the puck because he can usually hold on to it for prolonged periods by just evading skaters. But then it's just the decisions he makes sometimes once he has the puck on his stick is where you want to break Foodie from those habits a little bit. And I like it. Get him outside of the perimeter. I think this is something I actively see him working on too, getting into the inside ice. And I also think that you're spot on in having a hard time envisioning what he could bring to the Avs lineup in this year. I struggle with that too. And I think that's just the missing piece for Foodie to really focus on this year because he's hitting his goals too. We talk about someone like Georgiev. He's teachable. Foodie is the ultimate definition of teachable. He just really has a lot of instruction that he needs, but he'll listen to it. And one thing he had as a personal goal from last year was to be a half point per game player. And he exceeded that in the playoffs last year specifically. And he's starting off the year strong, staying true to that. And he has similar opportunity to what he had at the end of last year too. And he's sustaining it, which I think is a testament to some of the growth that's happening, maturity that's building in Foodie. And so this next year, I really want to see him solidify an identity as a player. It's not, it sounds bad to say that he doesn't have an identity, but I think he just needs to lean into being a little bit more of a role player in one way or another. And some of that is really specializing on the power play, which is a strength of his, but you know, it's something I think he could lean into. And then the defensive side of his game and just being a little bit more reliable there so that someone like Cronin trusts him a little bit more throughout the course of the game. But otherwise, he's starting off the year exceeding expectation in ways, but exactly where I'd like him to be too. So I'm really excited to see the direction he takes because he took a big step forward last year.
I want to tread lightly on this next player because I wanted this show to be a positive show. And if nothing else, he started out the season very positively, 6 points in 7 games. Is there any hope for Shane Bowers in this organization?
Yes, it's good. Man, I want to be careful about how I choose my words. I think there is hope. I worry about how much, too, of that hope is coming from a place of wanting to placate the optics of not giving Shane Bowers his chance this year, because he did have a good camp. Bednar spoke so highly of him outside of camp, but it was also understood that he would not be making the Avs roster at the beginning of this season. It was just understood that was not going to be the case, but it would look so bad for optics if we hear all these positives from camp. He has a pretty strong start to his season with the Eagles, and we don't see an NHL debut at some point, especially if there is something that comes up with injuries. But the one thing I will say that's just difficult is who they would call up ahead of Bowers, and it's still someone like a Kaut and a Charles Hudon. It's really hard too. Like, Foodie has entered this conversation in a little bit of a weird way. That makes it challenging, but I just think it'd be so bad for optics for us not to see Bowers get his chance. And I want to give Bowers some credit too for how he has started this season, because something that was a challenge for him was being visible in a bottom six, middle six role last year. And he has been moved throughout the Eagles lineup already. Honestly, with the introduction of Ben Myers down in Loveland, it has kind of shifted the forward group a little bit. And so we're seeing Sampo Ranta, Bocage, and Bowers kind of in this middle bottom six role at points. And Bowers is still finding the production, which is something he struggled to do last year. So if he can continue to do that, because he gets top power play minutes too, if he can continue to be visible no matter where he's placed in the lineup, he'll make a really strong case for himself, because that's sort of what you'd expect to see if he was called up to the Avs. He's not going to get top middle 6 minutes. It's going to be somewhere in the bottom. And if he can continue to be visible and as loud of a player as he is now, then I think there's hope for Bowers. But he's in a weird spot.
Weird spot, but at least he's playing well, if nothing else. Agreed. Anyone else you want to touch on, May, and totally you take it away if you want it?
I guess it's weird. I love the goaltenders, but I always forget to mention them in these conversations. And I have not had any personal issue with the way Eustace has started the season. He had an excellent game against Calgary in the first game of that series, where I thought he looked so solid. There's been some shakier games too, but honestly, there have been some games where the Eagles as a whole just didn't play very well. So I'm still high on Eustace, and I'm excited to see how the rest of the season plays out for him. I think JoJo as the backup in Loveland and having them split series like this too has benefited Eustace in a lot of ways. That I still think he will be able to find a rhythm. I still think he's the true starter. I think it takes just a little bit of pressure off. I think there's a lot of trust in JoJo, and JoJo has also looked pretty strong in net. So I'm just excited to see what comes next for Eustace too, and I'm glad he's in Finland.
Okay. Love it. If you guys haven't checked it out yet, go read Megan's piece on Kevin McDonald, the new GM of the Eagles, essentially the AGM of the Avs. Really interesting piece. Good. Yep. Some insight on how the organization is getting run a little bit, talking about some of those call-ups and things like that. So if you haven't checked that one out, go do it. We are going to get out of here for today, though. We appreciate all y'all hanging out. We will be back tomorrow and Thursday. With our usual time, yeah, doing shows, getting hyped for this Finland stuff. Keep an eye out for a bunch of work from Jesse as well.
Doing shows.
That's how well it works.
We out here, fam. Doing shows.
We're doing it live.
Let's go. We appreciate all y'all again, and at least for today, we'll talk to you later.